Welcome back to the Royal Mile Tavern on the Royal Mile in Edinburgh with your hosts,
David Robertson and
Chris Carter. We are here bringing you the final episode of the Religious Studies Project in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions. The final episode of our series on religion, migration and diaspora, which is Monica Salzbrunn talking about religion, migration and diaspora. And now we're going to pass over to Hannah,
we're going to pass over to ourselves, asking Hannah to introduce herself, and after that she's going to introduce the interview. So take it away, us.
We're here today with Hannah Lettinen via the magic of the internet. Hi Hannah, how are you today?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. And you?
I'm surviving. Yeah, so maybe Hannah, you could tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your research so that we know kind of where you're coming from.
Yeah, sure. So, hi everyone, I'm Hannah. I'm a master's student in comparative religion in the University of Turku, Finland. And I'm currently working on my master's thesis, the topic of which is the flying spaghetti monster. And, I've been focusing mostly on parody religions and religion on the internet, fictional religions or fiction-based religions, and atheism to an extent as well.
Great. Subjects that I think our listeners will have some awareness of by now. These are popular topics of ours. Yeah, but this particular interview we're playing today, you're not talking about invented or parody religions or really about atheism per se. What did you talk to Monica Salzbrunn about?
Me and Monica met in the ISSR conference earlier this year in Turku, and we were discussing Monica's work in the research institute in the University of Lausanne, and so. Yeah, it was very interesting to hear about it. It's about migration and diaspora studies.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you involved with the Religious Studies Project. Do you have any plans for the coming months with the RSP that you would feel comfortable sharing, or are there things which are maybe not quite pinned down yet that maybe should be kept a bit close to your chest?
Well, I've got plans, obviously, but the ones that I have kind of arranged so they are more structured already and not just ideas inside my head are a couple of interviews I'm going to make, because it's the 50th birthday of our department and also the Finnish Society for the Study of Religion. So I'm going to be interviewing our Professor Veikko Anttonen, at least.
Wonderful, yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Fantastic. Thanks, Hannah.
Cheers.
Bye, Hannah.
We are here in Turku, Finland, in the ISSR conference, the Sociology of Religion. And I have here with me Monica Salzbrunn from Switzerland, from the University of Lausanne. She is the full professor in religion, migration and diaspora studies, and also the director of the Institute for Social Sciences of Contemporary Religions and Observatory of Religions in Switzerland. And she's going to tell us a little bit about the institute and the work it does, and also their most recent research projects. And Monica has given a paper on the specularization of religious events. And so welcome, Monica.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Hannah, for giving me this opportunity to talk about the Institute and about my own research. I enjoyed very much the plenary session on the spectacle and, community building through events, which is quite an important phenomenon in different parts of the world. And I'm glad to give you some details about our research projects.
Thank you. So I would like to ask first about the Institute a little bit. So what kind of research do you have?
Well, the ISSRC is one of the biggest research institutes in Europe concerning social sciences. Its major strength is our real interdisciplinary work. We have one chair in sociology of religion, one chair in psychology of religion, one on new spiritual movements, and my chair on religions, migration, and diaspora studies. So we have sociologists, anthropologists, psychologists working, also theologians, and we have specialists for qualitative and for quantitative research. Some people do also mixed methods, so we cover a wide range of research methods and disciplines, and we also cover a wide range of areas. We have people who have done comparative studies between the US and Europe, Japan, China, Latin America, West Africa, North Africa. Mm-hmm. So it's really a broad perspective on contemporary religious phenomena, which are also put into a historical context. It's not contemporary that we don't look on long-term phenomena. And we have about 30 researchers, a lot of associate researchers, and master and PhD students. And our research projects are as various as research on religious plurality in prisons, Islam in urban spaces, schizophrenia and spirituality, art, diversity and cultural politics in post-migratory settings, congregations in Switzerland and the USA, cultural resources of Tunisian migrants in arts, performances between Europe and North Africa, etc. So it's really, and we also something about new spiritualities in Guatemala, children drawings of the representation of God in Japan, US, Europe, yeah.
So you have really a wide range.
Yeah, well, we try to cover. We try to cover a wide range of topics, and as we have lots of master and PhD students, we do have the chance to cross a lot of different fields and subjects.
So, as you cover a lot of these different fields, what would you say would be the most important trend, or what is the thing that you feel is important to take into account at the moment? What kind of...
Well, at the moment, I think the really upcoming way of dealing with religious phenomena is research on events. Mm-hmm. We organized, together with my colleague Laurent Amiot-Suchet, last year a big international conference on religious events or events within religion, with specialists from all over the world, and we are currently preparing the book, because a lot of researchers of our institute were dealing with events. Laurent Amiot-Suchet has been then for a long time research on pilgrimages, such as the ones to Lourdes. He's also taking students there, and he's also done research on the International Youth Day organized by the Vatican, like in Madrid last summer, and also on the counter manifestations organized by leftist groups and the LGBT movement against the visit of the Pope. So it was very interesting in terms of social movements, what was going on during this event. I'm also studying the occupation of public space through political and religious events in West Africa, in the US and in Europe, particularly Muslim groups, Sufi groups, but also Christian groups. Events are really an upcoming topic that we research, because events the religious practice through events is much more important in terms of numbers than the everyday practice in on a weekly basis or on the everyday prayers or whatever. Because as my colleague Stolz and Balif have shown, the institutionalized practices are really declining, and the spectacles are growing in importance. Also, if you take what's going on in Latin America or in Africa, pilgrimages can unite up to 2 million people or even more, whereas the churches are more and more empty. So. And one project on traveling cosmologies that I have is Rafaela von Weichs, which is examining the link between a pilgrimage in Uganda, the Mugongo, Cameroonian choirs and music groups, and events that are organized around the Abbey of Saint-Maurice in the valleys in Saint-Maurice. It's also quite important in the sense that it brings people together, it creates community during these events. The other question is to see if it's a durable community, if these events can produce commonality or community outside the event frame. That's another question, but the fact is that they are quite successful, be they organized by the groups themselves from the bottom, or be they organized by the institution from the top.
To go back a little bit, you mentioned St. Maurice.
Yes.
And I think not all of the listeners are familiar with this, so could you please account for it a little bit, because I think it's very interesting.
Well, this is the oldest Cluniacian abbey north of the Alps, which was inhabited during 1,500 years without interruption. It hosts relics of African saints, like Maurice, and it hosts saints that were canonized later by the official institutions, who were in fact Roman African soldiers from Theben, who refused to kill people because of their religion. And so they were killed, they were martyrs. And so there's a strong link between Saint-Maurice and Central Africa through the history of Saint-Maurice. And recently in 2007, the White Father missionaries brought relics from Uganda, from martyrs that were killed in 19th century, around 1885, by the Kabaka, the former king of Uganda, and canonized by Pope Paul VI in 1960s. They brought these relics in 2007, imagine that, not 1907, but 2007, to Europe, which, you know, poses the question about power relations in a post-colonial age, which is in fact the continuity of colonial power relations. So that's why the case of St. Maurice is extremely interesting for us. And the Catholic Church organized a celebration, a kind of pilgrimage for the saints of Africa in order to attract African immigrants, and also in order to make the place more attractive for Swiss Catholics. Because the idea is that the way that African practice the ritual is much more lively and much more entertaining than the way the Christian celebrations are organized in Europe. So it's a bit reifying the cliches about Africans and about Europeans. Of course, but it gives interesting results in terms of encounter, of interaction between different groups.
So you mentioned that they are more entertaining. So do you think this entertainment is kind of the thing or like a central thing in these religious events that yes, are taking more.
Well, I think there is a general tendency of making religious services more attractive, be it Christian services or be it Sufi rituals or gatherings. It's the fact that people are bored by very classical ways of celebrating mass. That's why churches are empty, and so they have to invent something. And they, I think, several groups are very much inspired by Pentecostals and their way of mediatizing their events, the way of entertaining people during their celebrations. That's why they last 3 or 4 hours, because people are really fascinated by the preachers, by a very charismatic way of preaching, by music, by testimonies, etc. And the Sufi brotherhoods, for example, whom I'm following for more than 15 years now, they also create spectacles. They create a very spectacular way of celebrating events, and they manage to occupy public space, particularly in West Africa, but also in the U.S., by creating an event. And this was invented by one of the sons of the founder of this brotherhood. That it was founded by Sheikh Ahmad Lubamba in the 19th century, when he was back from the exile in Gabon, where the French colonialists sent him, in order to shorten the influence or to lower the influence of his preachings. But it was the opposite which was produced, as always when you try to suppress something, it comes back 2 times stronger. So when he was back, he founded this brotherhood, the Murid brotherood, and as the percentage of migrants is very high in Senegal, it's more than 10%. Of course, the diaspora has a growing influence. They also have, of course, a very strong financial impact, and also an impact concerning the way they celebrate their gatherings. So one of his successors, the Sheikh Saliou Mbake, invented a kind of tournée. So he went regularly to the places where the diaspora gathers. He went to Brescia in Italy, to Marseille, to Bremen, northern Germany, to Paris, and to New York, to Harlem, in order to meet the followers where they are and to entertain their relationships. Because in migration contexts, the links, they are quite fragile.
We need to have a bit of small break now. Josephine needs some attention. We were talking about this study of these religious events, but you mentioned to me earlier that there are also two other big research projects.
Yeah, I just managed to get two important research projects as a principal investigator, funded by the Swiss National Funds for Research. One is on visible and invisible Islam within urban spaces, and the other one is on cultural and artistic resources of Haragas, those who burned their papers from Tunisia and who dream of coming to Europe, or who basically made it, be it in performative arts, dance, music, theater. And the first project on visible and invisible Islam in urban spaces started from the assumption that we have so many studies focusing on institutions and on official discourses, and so few studies on the silent majority, which never shows up in these institutions. So we overemphasize, I think, religious belongings. All the Muslims are supposed to know the Quran, although they don't. Some of them have never opened it. Some of them don't think they are Muslims. In Germany, was this Council of Ex-Muslims that was funded by people who were fed up of being considered as Muslims 24 hours a day, because none of us is Christian, Muslim, Masonic, or Mason, or atheist 24 hours a day. We have multiple belongings, multiple identities. So we wanted to focus on these 85% of people who never figure in the statistics, or they figure there, but they never, I mean, we never deepen their way of being. And especially in urban spaces, you have a presence of which is which can be seen in terms of architecture, shops, artistic practices, in terms of clothing, in terms of music, in terms of different ways of practicing the city. And this is quite a challenge to research this instead of just going to the mosque and do interviews with the imam, or even not with people who go there. So we also deal with festive events that take place there and that bring together people who usually don't go to the mosque. But we go further and we see how people handle their belongings inside and outside these spaces. And we have lots of highly skilled immigrants in Switzerland. We have people who deal only with their more casual belongings, because you have to know that, for example, the Bosnians, they have a grocery store at their cultural center, and food is the most important thing for them. It brings them together. The Turks, they are very much into soccer, so when Galatasaray plays in Champions League, this is really a community-building event rather than any religious celebration. People from Kosovo, they are into music and dance performances, but this is closer to music and performances from the Balkan area rather than, with elements which could be perceived as being Muslim. So they have different ways of being, which are under research. We only see the Mosque of Geneva, which is has been financed by Saudi Arabian money. We see some mosques in the Arc-Lémanic metropolitan area around Lake Geneva, which are dominated by Muslims from the Maghreb, although they are minority within minority. They are only a small number, but they really much influence the way that the mosques are constructed and the way that space is negotiated and such. And a lot of people do not share their culture, especially converts. I recently met the president of a regional Muslim federation, and he went to a stand of a Turkish group, and he said, "Oh, are these baklava?" And the Turk answered, "No, these are lukum," which is a different kind of deli. And this I realized that this convert has never been to Turkey, or even not probably to the Near East, so otherwise he would have known what is baklava dili and what is lukum dili, because they're really different and easy to distinguish once you have noticed this. So there is it's a very complicated mosaic. If you take the cultural belongings, if you take the socio-economic level, which is quite high in these contexts, if you take artistic activities, consumption, etc. And this is really a big challenge, because this needs a really broad approach. Urban studies, anthropology, sociology of migration, of religion are brought together in this project. Yeah, and the second project is a bit linked to that in the sense that it starts from Haraga, from people who are burning their papers, people who came from Tunisia and who either arrived in Switzerland or who dream of coming there. And they develop cultural resources. Some of them are digitalized. They're visible on the internet, like YouTube videos or our music, our dance performances, or arts, where they express their imagination of Europe, and particularly of Switzerland, because lots of Tunisians basically come to Switzerland. And we look at the way these representations are created, the different references that can be audible or visible within these references, and we see how this is transported in a physical way, but also in a virtual way. Mm-hmm. I believe that the religious reference is rather low, and that the political aspect is extremely important. And if there was a Tunisian musician, a rap musician, who was arrested 2 or 3 weeks ago, which shows that the government is aware of the extraordinary impact that art has for the political expression. So that also shows how important that is. And artistic performances are also quite visible during events, during political events. Look at the performance of the of these people at the Taksim Place in Istanbul. I will publish an edited volume with two other colleagues on Istanbul and rural area and diversity within urban spaces this autumn at Palgrave Macmillan. And it's really part of the upcoming debates that we have about expressions of diversity, because in Taksim, in this European quarter of Istanbul, now you have people who perform just by standing alone. They stand alone silently on the place. They don't do anything. They just stand there. They don't talk. And this is already subversive. It's a subversive political act. So events are more and more, I think, important wherever you are, and especially in contexts where democratic expression is difficult. So, yeah, that's also something that I mentioned in my paper on the spectacularization of belonging, or the eventization of religious practice. You have to reinvent ways of practicing religion, especially in a context where religious expression is limited or forbidden, for example. There you need to invent ways of gathering and ways of encoding messages. And events can bring together people who usually don't have the right to get together. They can be represented in a virtual space. They can also be rematerialized, as Ismo Kantola has written in a recent paper. So there's a strong link between materialized community building and virtual space, which can be studied during these events.
Yes, this is it's a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. This is obviously the first question mm-hmm. that just comes into mind. Like you mentioned, that there is these events in themselves, then there is the virtual environment mm-hmm. where these resources are being spread mm-hmm. and virtually anyone can do it. Mm-hmm. Everyone can produce a YouTube video, for example. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, where is the research going mm-hmm. next, and how do mm-hmm. you plan to mm-hmm. study this maze of all different mm-hmm. aspects? Mm-hmm.
Well, it's extremely important to contextualize these events. It's not enough just to go there and to tape it. It's extremely important to observe the preparation of the events, the event itself, the comments or circulation of these events in the virtual space, in Twitter, internet, forums, YouTube, etc. Videos produced about the events by the people themselves. Videos produced by the researchers, feedback with the people who were there or with the organizers by showing them the videos that we've taken, and then seeing what's going on. What's the duration of these events? Are they just ephemera? Is the group collapsing as soon as the event is finished, or does it transform the group? Does it transform the belongings? Does it contribute to invent new forms of belongings? Can it be an alternative for former, more traditional practices? And what's the link between the ordinary and the extraordinary? That's one important question, because we are not saying that there is an opposition between both. We're just saying that there are new forms of religious practices and belonging that are being invented, and that succeed more and more, or better and better than the traditional forms of belonging.
Oh, thank you very much for this. I have a feeling that our little guest Josephine is getting a bit
the comment of
anxious.
My daughter to my wife.
But thank you very much for your time. And
it was a pleasure to share this with you.
Thanks to Hannah for that fascinating interview there, bringing a close to our series on migration
and diaspora.
Yeah.
Next week it's an interview that you recorded.
It is. We had a couple of viewers the other week. We have a couple of mine in the coming weeks. So it's the start of a new series, Chris, what I'm very excited about, looking at some classical theorists.
We've been wanting to do this for quite some time, actually.
It's been since we started.
Because it's quite difficult, in a way, to get scholars to talk about someone else's work. You know, because everyone works with theorists, but to get someone to, you know, spend an entire podcast being like, no, I'll not talk about me, talk about someone else. So you had a fantastic interview, it was a couple of months ago.
With Robert Segal. He's a great chap. He's really, really funny. And very enthusiastic, and he was a dream to work with, in as much as I just told him to start and then relaxed back. I think I asked two questions the entire time.
And what was he talking about?
He was talking about Carl Gustav Jung. Probably, well, I mean, he was a psychiatrist, a psychologist, I guess, but has had an enormous influence not only on the study of religion, but on Western culture in general. So that's going to be a great interview. And then we've got one on Levi-Strauss coming up with Paul-François Tremblay. We've got one on
Durkheim.
Who's that with again?
It's Ivan Strensky.
Oh, that's Ivan Strensky one, yeah. And we're hoping to get a fourth one from the AAR conference, which
starts on Saturday.
Starts this Saturday on the week that you're listening to this. Now, I'd like to say that I'd be following the news from AAR this Saturday, but I won't.
Why won't you, David?
I'll be watching the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special.
Wow. And
do you know who else will be?
No idea. Not me.
No, but Suzanne Owen and Russell McCutcheon will be at the AAR.
Will they be eating Smarties?
They will be eating Smarties. A little in-joke there. But hopefully that'll give them a smile. On their way to the AAR.
Yeah, of course they'll be listening to this on their plane.
Oh,
whatever.
I expect
yeah,
so.
That's what they always do.
I think they always do, yeah. But yeah, we've got a lot happening in the AAR this year.
You have kept track of it better than I have.
Well, yeah.
There is a thing called That Camp. I think it's Technology and Humanities or something. It's a study group within the AAR that's all based on sort of new technologies and the study.
They're doing a workshop. They're doing, I think it's a day-long workshop on using digital media and new media technologies in the humanities and religious studies particularly. I'd got in touch with one of the organisers earlier in the year saying, you know, it'd be great if we could cover this at least. And so luckily we've managed to have our friend David Conachy sit down and record a roundtable with them on it, so we should hear what worked, what didn't, and that'll be very useful.
Yeah, and one of the organisers is Christian Peterson as well.
Yeah, that's who I spoke to. Yeah.
He runs New Books in Religion, which is a sister podcast of ours. We're not competing. We do different things.
Yeah.
We're very happy to support them. Also, Jack Thomas from Macquarie University in Australia is sort of heading up our team out there coordinating things. He's interviewing. He's doing at least three or four interviews.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much about the interviews because you know how these things sometimes don't pan out quite.
Exactly.
But
got a lot coming from there.
Even if we get half of what we've organised, then it should be a phenomenal amount of coverage.
Yeah. And we're always pleased to bring you stuff that's not just based in the UK, because you know we're constrained by geography and space and place.
We are.
but the project as a as an entity isn't.
Yeah, it's an uncontrollable behemoth right now, really.
It really is.
Or are you finished on the AAR?
I'm finished on that, yeah.
I mentioned the BAR.
I could talk lots more about the Doctor Who thing, but I mean, it's not the Doctor Who project, is it?
Well, I'm sure we could probably have a podcast on Doctor Who at some point.
Doctor Who and religion. I'll send Suzanne an email.
Yeah, yeah. We mentioned the BASR. Christmas is coming. We've had a lot of uptake on our Amazon.co.uk links in the UK, obviously. In the US, we do have an Amazon.com link. You can start using that as well. We won't mind if you start.
Now, does that work in Canada as well?
I don't know. It's unfortunate that Amazon does. You have to set up separate accounts for all the different Amazons. The .com was an experiment. We should maybe set up a .au for Australia,
maybe,
because we've got a good following down there.
Maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But come on, the States.
Yeah,
you know, there's lots of you. You know, you're the paradigm of consumerist society. Let's go consume some stuff. We need royalties.
Come on.
USA.
USA.
We're jesting, of course. We love you all.
Exactly. Facebook followers continue to grow. We're over 1,300 at the moment.
Mm.
Twitter's similarly about 1,100.
Oh, hey, I've got some news. We haven't mentioned this. Last month, October, was the busiest month on the Religious Studies Project by a mile.
Absolutely. Country mile, as you might
a
say.
A country mile, yeah. 1,300 hits on the website last month.
13,000.
13,000, yeah, sorry. 13,000 hits on the website last month alone, which is, I think, about 30% up on our previous busiest month.
Yeah. I mean, that's maybe not big for, you know, like the Guardian website or the New York Times or something, but we think for a sort of niche academic website, that's pretty good.
Pretty
fish. Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah,
I'll not complain.
So thanks for all your support. Let's keep this train rolling. Thanks for listening.